condition, my condition was in. I woke up this morning with the sun down.
Hello and welcome back to Back to Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. So Dave Scatina and the board. Looks like we're going to have a bullish day today, like we're, we normally do. Well, normally, wow. What's normal these days? S&P futures up 17, Dow futures up 180, NASDAQ futures up 55. When I point to normally, usually the week before Memorial Day is gets slower as the week goes. And by the way, we usually trickle up, sort of like a Christmas week. But then how many hundred points we were down a couple of years ago, though, David, on Christmas Eve? So it's not all the time. So it's not really a trading strategy. It's just an observation. How's that, Kevin? An observation.
It's an observation, and without a hypothesis explaining why.
Yes, the when I was a Ute, well, it was a long time ago. I knew you guys when I was Utes, by the way. I was a Ute. The University of Chicago.
When you were a what? What's that word?
Did you say Ute? Did he say Ute?
When I was a Ute.
Yeah. What a great! I still miss that guy. He was Lurch, and he was the guy in Car 54.
He wasn't Lurch. He wasn't Lurch. He was Herman Munster.
Oh, that's right. That's right. And he was also was he Tootie or Muldoon in Car 54? Where are you?
Let me see. He was probably. I think he was Muldoon.
The other guy.
Rich guy.
Yeah.
Versus Lurch, who was a guy named Ted Cassidy, who actually was not at a real high level, but he was a pretty good college basketball player. Because I always used to refer to Luca Garza on Iowa. I refer to as Lurch, and somebody pointed out to me that their college basketball stats, Ted Cassidy's and Luca Garza's, were almost exactly the same.
Really? Well, back in the day, the first place. Now everybody's, well, I won't say everybody, but some schools have them now. You know, it was a big research for stock prices and trends is Notre Dame now. It have been for a while, Kevin. What I understand, at my last reunion, I talked to one of their professors who had actually used one of my articles in one of his tests of all things. So I met the guy, and he was saying, "Yeah, but University of Chicago back in the day, actually, they had a Center for Research of Stock Pricing or something like that, where they got a big grant from somebody. And they took virtually every single stock tick. This is back when everything was on the New York Stock Exchange, of course. So it was a little easier. All the computing capacity was nowhere near the same, so that made it harder. The net, I don't know whether it was harder or easier. Every uptick versus downtick, first of all, for people, a lot of people who trade an awful lot, I don't know what that means. Let's say a stock is a is $40 bid at $40.10. And the last trade is $40. Okay, then the next trade's $40.10. That's considered an uptick. It's an upward move in the stock off the last print. Hence, also, if it trades $40.10 and the next trade is $40 even, then that's considered a downtick. So they did this massive study, Kevin. I mean, years and years worth of study, and they decided that that you could not program, you could not get a pattern on an up and a down tick, that you could just trade the pattern and make money. There was a slight aberration in that if there was an uptick, the next trade was slightly higher chance of being another uptick. So there was a little bit of momentum even in those days, but that the cost of doing that or the chances were way less than the commissions. Okay, which is interesting because now, you know, the user thinks there are no commissions. That doesn't mean he's not paying anything. Because now the uptick and the downtick is amazingly blurred to the point where, people get in the middle of the market and so forth and it's preferenced off and there's payment for order flow and all kinds of stuff. You could still probably determine what, but anyway, that was the research at the time. Was the momentum was not, you couldn't trade the momentum. It actually came down. It wasn't a random walk, which is what the book was. A random walk theory. It was something called mathematically called a sub-martingale. How's that for this time of the morning, David? Does anybody know what that is?
Sub-martingale is any relation to a wing martingale
or a bird? I don't know. But anyway, in other words, there was a very slight follow-up, for lack of a mathematical term that I can't think of, a very slight positive chance that if there was an uptick or a downtick, that the next trade would be also an uptick or a downtick. And now it's interesting because we had this big discussion last night. Some people trade on the floor still, and risk managers for huge companies. And you know, one of the guys was was saying, "What causes somebody to buy AMC up whatever yesterday?" Or what I said, don't you get it? The new world is nobody at any of those kinds of trades in those stock is quote investing. There's no such thing as an investment. It has to do with momentum trading. It has to do with, I'm buying it at 26. I don't care if they make any money. I don't care if they have any employees. I don't even care if they have a building or whatever they have. Fact is, it looks to me like the next idiot's going to pay 26.5, and I want to get in before, but I want to sell them to him. This is so 1999 in somebody's stocks right now, in one man's opinion, that there is no such thing as, well, what do you think the place is really worth? Who cares? It's on everybody's billboard. It's on everybody's tweet thing. Buy Northern Tissue and get wiped out or something. Whatever you want to do. I mean, it has nothing to do with a lot of it has to do with the Fed. Certainly in bonds in Europe, and there isn't anybody in this world stupid enough to buy a bond with negative interest rates if they didn't think somebody was going to buy it from him. And the somebody is the central bank. So I was there for a little bit of a rant, but we've gone off the edge, Kevin, in the sense that there's no, if you were to ask the last 50 people, retail people who bought AMC, let's take AMC for instance, because I actually do have movie theater, ask them how much money they made last year. If their cash flow goes back to 2018, how long would it take from the growing to the stock price? What are their losses from COVID, if any? They might have gotten something from the federal government where their losses aren't so much. Ask one person to explain that, they'd look at you like you had four heads. What are you talking about? Stock's going up. I'm buying it. Okay. So I don't know what psychology that is, Kevin, but it's something.
Maybe somebody just dusted off some old models from 1999 and rewrote them for an app.
Or wrote them, thought they were tulips or something. But, you know, right. But
I thought they were tulips. That could be it, too.
But you can't.
I have a sports question for
you. Go ahead.
Is it possible for one play in baseball to be simultaneously one of the smartest you've ever seen and one of the stupidest you've ever seen?
You talking about Harvey Baez?
Yeah.
God. I just heard it this morning. I didn't actually see it, but it seems odd to me. The first baseman, is he the dumbest man on earth or what?
Top 10 for sure.
Yeah. David, you hear about this?
I read about it. They talked about it on radio coming in this morning that exactly what you said, Kevin. It was the dumbest and smartest play at the same time.
Kevin, why don't you explain what happened?
I think, you know, in Baez's case, it started out just having, you know, okay, I'm going to stop. And then when the guy chased him all the way back to home plate, then it, you know, it was just kind of a fun, and when he finally tagged him, they'd all have a laugh and then go about the next inning. But then the guy totally panicked. So for those who haven't seen it, I'm going to hit the tweet button right now, so the listeners can take a look at it. But what happened is Contreras was on second, and Baez was at the plate. There were two outs, so this should have ended the inning. And so he hit a two bouncer to third base, and the third baseman, who had plenty of time, sent through wide on the home plate side of first base. So he took the first baseman off the bag. Now he still had plenty of time to turn and tag Baez.
Or go
back to
the base.
So Baez just decided he would stop, and then when the guy took a step toward him to tag him, then Baez started retreating a little bit with him, which was kind of funny. And at that point, all the first baseman had to do was say, fine, and just turn around and go back and step on first base, and the inning would have been over. Instead, he chased Baez, and they got all the way back to, maybe 2 feet from home plate. Meanwhile, Contreras was running all the way, and so right at the last second, the first baseman caught Contreras in his view and flipped it to the catcher. And Contreras slid in under the tag, and the umpire said, safe. Okay, now what's left? Well, then this is where Baez really, where instead of just being fun, where smart trick kicked in, he turned around and started hightailing it for first base. second baseman had not been covering first, so it was a race to see who could get to first fast enough. And the catcher threw the ball away, trying to lead the second baseman to the bag. Baez wound up on second. So this is all with two outs. Even after Contreras scored and the umpire signaled safe, if they had still stepped on first before Baez got there, then he would have been out, the inning would have been over, the run wouldn't have counted. And they didn't manage that. Instead, Baez wound up on seven or second, where naturally he scored on a bloop single the next play.
Well, okay,
which immediately put the pitcher on suicide watch, I think.
All right, so you got to back up here. For those that aren't intricate in the rules of baseball, if for instance somebody, if there's guys on first and second, and a guy hits the ball and he tries to stretch it into a double. And he's out at second. As long as the person on second crosses home plate before the tag is administered to the runner, the run counts. Okay, but whenever there's a force play involved, it doesn't matter. You have a big lead off at third base and cross home before the force out at first base. That could happen all the time. But as long as the guy's out on a force play, the run does not count. Is what Kevin's talking about.
Whether it's out on a forced play at second base because they got the lead, the runner, or whether it's, quote, what we really don't think of as a force, the normal out at first base, doesn't matter. As soon as he does, the inning's over, just like it would be on a fly ball. You know, that's one where a guy, you know, a fly ball is the perfect example of where a man on third might be well across home plate before the ball is caught. Doesn't matter. So the Pirates had they did so many things wrong, and it all started with a bad throw that should have been inconsequential. But there were so many things done wrong along the way.
Well, normally,
when the guy tossed it, when he did the little flip to the catcher to try and get Contreras, he still was between Baez and first base. He still could have just held the ball and tagged out Baez. He just would have been standing 2 feet from first from the plate.
It was
the minute the guy threw the ball, and Baez realized what was going on, and said, "You know, this has gone from a little lark to a oh my God, I'm going to be safe at first."
Well, Kevin, do you think any of this
is really funny to see? It's one of the funniest things I've ever seen on a baseball field.
Well, you wonder in this particular. I mean, you don't think about the players, but you know about Baez, but. You wonder whenever something like this happens, somebody's going to say it's because kids didn't play Pee Wee League. You know, they didn't learn the fundamentals, or you know, some esoteric piece of crap. Somebody will wing at you. So I'm going to do that. Do you think a lot of this has to do with if you have any talent, you're motored through the minor league system pretty fast, and you also last year there really was no minor leagues. Because I've heard both the A-Rod and somebody else, you know, Ozzy, somebody that I was talking about, how these guys don't spend very much time in AAA. And the Cubs were, was the Sox were just playing? Who was out in Pittsburgh? Was that the Sox or the Cubs? The Cubs were out there.
No, it was the Cubs. Cubs just finished up in Pittsburgh.
And they were talking about this pitcher who came in relief the other night for the Pirates, and the guy he'd been AAA. He had pitched like six games in AAA, or had six appearances. His earned run average was like 9. He'd walked 4 and struck out 1. I'm thinking, you call this guy? I mean, granted, it doesn't mean necessarily that he wasn't a stud in Double A or something, and he just had, you know, was in Triple A for 2 weeks and was just getting acclimated. I mean, that could happen, but it's not like, I mean, when we were Utes, there were people. I mean, there used to, when a guy came up to the majors, not all the time. But there were guys who were 20-game winners in AAA before they came up. And they were talking about some outfielder. I read this article once about some outfielder the Dodgers had. He was in AAA, and they had somebody, you know, the major leagues was good. And the guy hits like 310 and was really good defensively. And he comes up for spring training, and they go, like, you need another year. And the other guy retires in, like, July. They bring the guy up. I mean there are people that hit 300 in AAA. There were people that had 20 games. I'll guarantee you this. Other than Tony Esposito's maybe shutout record in hockey, I don't think we ever see, in David's kid's lifetime, we're never going to see another 20 game winner in AAA. Because he'll be up here so fast if he was that good, right? I mean, it's just different.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not, you know, it's a big difference between however many 30 teams and 16. You know, just like in hockey, it's a big difference between however they have 32 versus, you know, what was there, six originally?
Yeah, the original six, sure.
And, well, I got one for you. Can you name the original expansion six? I had this one going the other night in the...
The original expansion six. So the original six, we've got the two Canada teams, Toronto and Montreal. And then we had Boston, New York Rangers, Chicago. Who am I missing?
Detroit.
So I'm missing
Detroit.
One of the, oh, Detroit. Okay, so those are your originals. The next group included for sure the Philadelphia Flyers, St. Louis Blues.
That's
the Penguins part of that?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So we need three more out of that.
David, you're not doing much
better.
This
was... this was before they, well, the WHA was still around. I don't think
they were they even there yet? I don't think so.
They might not have even been there yet, so that takes out like a Winnipeg or somebody
yeah.
like that. So the next few. It's bad radio for me to sit here and think about it, so who are the other
Well, it was, the one I'm surprised you didn't get was the Minnesota.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And, but one that nobody gets.
They were the North Stars at the point.
Yeah. But there actually were two California teams. There was the Los Angeles, and then there was one that was the California Golden Seals.
I remember them. Yeah,
but I don't know where they went. But they were in San Francisco or Oakland or something. There was a big push, sort of like hockey thought that baseball, you know, getting the Dodgers and the Giants out to California opened up a whole new world for baseball, which it did. But it also corresponded with having the 707 aircraft, right, and not a train getting you out there and back. I mean, there's no way you could have played baseball on the West Coast without jet air travel, I don't think.
Right. The only way you would have been able to pull that off would just be to have a whole Western division out that way that never really played in the East until playoff time.
Right. And nobody gets that one because I. When I first heard, I'm going, the who? I remembered the name, but I'm like, oh, I forgot. I didn't know about those guys. Where the hell did they come from? But I don't know how long they even lasted out there, who they became, but anywho. So, Kevin, listening on the way in today, and it's interesting. I was kind of ranting at Kramer yesterday, and, you know, and people that are pushing.
That's fun to do anyway,
no
matter what.
I just, you know, it's funny when people... talking in there right now. I mean, I'm stunned as somebody who is a registered guide. I mean, knows I manage money for people, and actually have a few more. And people should be looking to hedge their stuff now, but they don't, or some do. I mean, I'm getting new clients all the time, but it's interesting how many people have risk concerns about their portfolio and do nothing about it. I mean, they call me and say I'm really concerned, blah blah blah, and then market goes up a day and they forget all about it for 6 months, but. It's, you know, that's just the way people are, I guess. But the what people are constantly, when they're talking their position, are willing to make assurances and tell you stuff that they don't know, that they couldn't possibly know. I mean, people will tell you how much an asset class is now Bitcoin. Okay, does that mean you're long Bitcoin, Joe? Well, yeah, I just bought it, and now you're telling me to buy it. Well, yeah. I mean, this is older than the Buttonwood tree, right? I mean. I bought it, therefore it's a great buy, therefore you should buy it. Oh, by the way, I'll sell it to you. I mean, people don't change. I mean, people don't change. I mean, it's like, you know, this was, banks used to do this in the 20s until the 1933 and 34 Securities Acts. Banks would put companies out there for sale. They'd tell people what a great buy they were, and people would say, oh, by the way, who's selling it to me? Or they didn't ask. And the bank would say, well, we are. You go, wait a minute. If it's such a good deal, how come you're willing to sell it to me? I don't worry. I got, you know, don't worry
Not
about
as
it.
Not as much as you want.
Yeah. But they're assuring people, you know, and something. I mean, I don't know how Kramer honestly is on TV after the episode with his buddy Jimmy Lammert at Sears and Kmart. I mean, if you went back and took those tapes, I'm not, you know, ragging on the guy. Well, maybe I am, but I'm saying you couldn't if you were.
Yeah,
those,
yes, you are.
Yeah, but it's if you go back, they weren't. They were assurances essentially that Eddie Lammert was a genius. This is a real estate play, and you're betting on Eddie Lammert. You don't care if you sell another pair of blue jeans at Sears. I mean, this guy's got it all figured out. These people lost all that money if you hung on there. The thing went bankrupt. The stocks went out worthless. I mean, and without any, and these guys don't break stride. I mean, the fact is, I'm not blaming the Sears or the Kmart episode on Jim Cramer. I mean, I'm not at all. But the point is, you shouldn't reassure people things that you don't know. And I know I was getting some heat a few weeks ago regarding the COVID stuff. And, you know, I'm not a doctor. You're not a doctor. Carl's not a doctor. Okay, fine. Well, this morning, all they were talking about is people going now to high schools and colleges in the Chicago area and reassuring and trying to push younger people into taking the vaccine. Now, first of all, I have every intention of taking the vaccine as soon as I think my antibodies, since I had it. So I'm within like a month of doing it. So I'm not... But my observations are, for somebody over the age of probably 55, 60, somewhere in there, the odds to me are that everybody should probably get it, because your chances of having a problem with, that I can see now, your chances of having a problem with the vaccine while you're still around seem small. And, oh, by the way, if you get COVID, you could have a real problem with it. Maybe it could be your last act. It's different for people who are 17 or 16, and you're forcing them to get it. First of all, very, very few of them have, I mean, there's some people who have issues, but out of all the people in college last year, was there even one death coming? Last I heard, there wasn't. Now these people have another 80 years, hopefully, to live. And if there's any kind of buried problem with the vaccine that's not going to show up for 20 years, it's probably not going to affect me all that much, or you, or, but it sure as hell will affect. So how is it that anybody can be comfortable enough to go out to some class and assure these people that this is the right thing to do? It may in fact be, but how does somebody, I don't care if you're Fauci, I don't care if you're Einstein, how do you assure somebody that something's not going to happen 20 years from now? When, I mean, everybody is ragging big time on these anti-vaccine people, and I, for one, if I had kids,
prefer to think of them as the still part of the control group.
Well, okay, but if I had kids, I would probably have them vaccinated. Okay, I probably wouldn't do it all in one shot like they do.
I absolutely would not. So yeah, there's a point of difference there.
Yeah, well, okay, but I'm saying I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't have a shot where there's six different vaccines in there. I'd say, let's split this up a little bit. Well, how do we know if they don't interact with each other? I'm you know, somewhere in the middle there. But the idea that don't assure me that those shots don't create autism until you know what causes autism. How do you assure me that it? I mean, I don't think it does, Kevin. I honestly don't think it does. But I'm not going to assure you that it does unless you can tell me what causes it. How can you tell me what doesn't? I mean, I'm just using some scientific method, even though I'm not quoted doctor. And until they figure out what's causing all these things that are happening to these kids, how can they run around with a bare face and tell people what isn't? It's like me talking about the market. I can, if you say to me, hey, Chief, what about IBM? I'll say, as far as I know, you know, I've been watching the stock for 40 some years. As far as I know, this is what they do. They never really had any issues with, you know, people have been embezzling money. They don't. There's not a satellite company somewhere that people are throwing the money out, a la, you know, a la Bear Stearns, or a la, which was the energy place? What was the name of the energy place that went under? We went to jail. What's her name was on the board? Graham's wife.
Oh, Enron.
Yeah, Enron. I don't think it, but it. But I can't assure you, since I've never been in a board meeting and I've never been in the can with the CEO, nor do I want to be. I can't assure you that some nefarious thing isn't going on there. How can I? I mean, it's one thing to say, based on this, here's my opinion. It's quite another to assure somebody on something you don't know. Why are people so comfortable doing that when I'm not?
Well, I don't know the answer to that. I will say that my response to those who say you're not a doctor is, one, I'm totally capable of reading, so there are all kinds of studies that have been published now. And I'll give you one example.
Can you,
one of the assurances.
Hey, Kevin, can you hang left the break on that? Yeah, I can. SP Futures up 16. Don't forget what we were talking about, though, like we always do. SP Futures up 16, NASDAQ Futures up 49. Be right back.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks,
stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now,
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen, Mr. Dave Scatino on the board. S&P futures up 1550, last day before the holiday weekend. NASDAQ futures up 47, Dow futures up 168. Individual stocks, they actually have Boeing down 270. It was up a bunch yesterday, though. Everything else in the Dow is up, and we also have Salesforce is up 11. They had earnings last night, so it's... They're liking their earnings. And Walmart is up 40 cents, but the rest of the Dow is pretty much all up. Goldman Sachs up $2. Nothing major other than the Salesforce. Around the rest of the world, we've got Asia. Nikkei up 600, 2%, 29,149. Shanghai down 8, so 0.2%. The HSI, which is Hang Seng, up 11, which is actually pretty much unchanged because those guys. That's 0.04%. Let's call that unchanged. Over in Europe, we got the DAX up 92.6, FTSE up 20.3%, CAC around up 43.7. So bullish in Europe as well. So we have review yesterday. Dow was up 141, S&P was up 4, NASDAQ was down 2. So not much. Well, the Dow keeps moving because individual stocks there. Like I said, yesterday was a lot of Boeing. Bonds, 1.61 unchanged. I think the bonds close at, I think they close at noon today, right, David? Bund, minus 0.17, that's unchanged. Japan, positive 0.09, that's actually up 2 basis points. UK, positive 0.81, so they're back up over 0.8. Oil, up 36 cents, 67.21, it's up a half a percent. Brent, almost to 70, 69.70, it's up a quarter. Natural gas up 3 cents, 2.98. Arbob up a penny at 2.16. And we've got gold, down 470 to 1893. Silver down 25 cents, 2769. Copper down 5 cents, 461. There's been some huge, I think everybody knows that I get the option, unusual option activity report. Same one that John has, and he talks about on CNBC all the time, Dr. J. And there have been some huge buyers. David, you know what? Up till now, these guys have gotten nothing but getting spanked on these things. But, I mean, the silver ETF is the SLV. And I've been along that for people for a while now. And for a while, it didn't do very well. Now, the last 6 months, we've done real well in there. But it's kind of stuck here in the mid-25s. I mean, David, there's been people with 10, 15, 20,000 buys of, like, the June 35s and stuff and 38s. I'm going, what are these people thinking? Where are you getting this money? I mean, it would make so much more sense if you thought it was going to 35 to buy like the 30-35 spread or something.
Right, I agree with that.
Your break even would be 4 or 5 hours lower. But I mean, these people, whoever these people are, all of a sudden out of the blue, there'll be like 30,000 or something trades. I'm going, geez, it's 50% out of the money. I mean, right. What are they doing? I mean, they should hire me. Or you would say, I can tell you a way better way. If you think it's going to there by June, I can find an old different way to. I mean, it's got to go through the strike and up just to break even, right? I mean,
correct. Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy. Anyway.
So wait a minute. Let's go back now. Tell me about the June 38th. That sounds like something that would interest me.
It probably would. But I'm saying if it's a 38th strike in June, it means you've got till June 18th for it to go through. To go through 38. I mean, that's where you're buying the right to buy the stock at 38 between now and the 18th of June, and the damn thing is 26.
You weren't supposed to take me seriously.
Oh, all right. Well, hey, somebody else just put a whole lot of money behind me. I hope it's not theirs. Just, let's put it that way. David, what do you got for traffic, weather, sports?
Well,
weather's
a lot of money. It took a lot of money, a lot of cosmetic surgery money to get those June 38s.
Good morning. It's 6:36 in Chicago. Weather currently, crappy morning, 46. Rainy and windy, and we're going to see a high, hopefully at 52, with more rain and gusting wind. For our Phoenix listeners, beautiful morning, 71 and clear, a high of 101 and sunny. Traffic's a mess this morning. Slow down out there. We'll start out with solid traffic on 55 north at the Ryan exit, as usual, which has got 55 north backed up. Accident reported at North Avenue and 355. The Kennedy's a mess. East before Division is a rollover truck. The right three lanes are blocked. And also, the exit ramp is closed at Division Street. There's also another,
See, I got on the entrance of Division and I was by myself.
Yeah. And there's also one east at Addison Street, blocking the right lane. In sports, NBA playoff last night, Suns lose game 3. 109-95. They're down 2-1. They lost to the Lakers. In baseball last night, the Sox beat the Orioles 5-1. Cubs beat the Pirates that we talked about earlier 5-3. And Arizona drops 1-10 innings. Golf. We are at Charles Schwab's Open in Fort Worth, Texas, where Sergio Garcia and Jordan Spieth are 7-under. Back to you.
So where would we be? 5-under? We'd be right there? Not really. Huh? Well, I can't believe Phil is playing back-to-back. He's playing this week, too.
Yeah. That was a hell of a run he had last week.
Well, yeah, I'd take a week or two off of that if it was me. But, Kevin, you were saying.
If it were me and I played that much golf in 4 days, I would need a week or two off.
Boy, no, you're not kidding. Those guys are pretty good shape. I mean, they hang in there. I mean, I'll bet everything that there's known to the world has been helping those guys. Stem cells, you name it. I mean, if you had that kind of money, why not? I mean, one of my buddies who's sort of in the business claims that, you know, virtually every NFL quarterback in over the age of 30 spends time in Europe getting stem cell treatments on their shoulders in the offseason. Wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, so where were we? We were talking about the weather or something like that.
No, you were talking about the...
Okay. When people say you're not a doctor, first of all, I'll just speak for myself. I can read. So when I read a study from a credible medical journal saying that spike proteins from the mRNA vaccines are now being found in the blood and they're investigating what that has to do with the clotting issues that they've had, and I know that as part of the filing for emergency use authorization that Pfizer said it doesn't get in the blood, it all stays in the muscle, then that might make me raise an eyebrow and say, "Before I want to see how this plays out before I get the vaccine." Okay, I think that's a totally reasonable position, and you don't have to be a doctor to read.
No.
Second of all, there are tons of people in all walks of life who are really good with data, statistics, etc. And so as I go through, as we've gone through the last year, and, you know, Carl's been great on this, and all of us have discussed this, when the statistics don't bear out what the prescription is supposed to do, whether it be mask mandates, lockdowns, or so on, you don't have to be a doctor to understand what the statistics are telling you. So that's a second part. And the third part is, why would you not be skeptical anytime someone is coming out with policy mandates? It's our, you know, it's almost a responsibility. Why would you just blindly say, he's a doctor, let's do it that way, without asking a lot of questions? What, you know, if you knew, for example, that a drug like ivermectin has been has had tremendous success keeping people out of the hospital, is, you know, as a treatment for COVID-19, and the data is bearing it out, even though we don't have an explanation of why, the correlation is very, very strong, and it's working, and that gets squelched so that they can, because you can't get emergency use authorization for a vaccine when there is a viable treatment available. And so everybody calls, basically ostracizes anyone who has an alternative, and so the use authorization goes through. Does that not make you raise an eyebrow and at least start asking questions about why were we so hell-bent on making this vaccine work when there were alternatives? And of course, after the authorization is granted, then all of a sudden it's okay to use ivermectin. Yeah, oh yeah, it does seem to be working.
Well, it does.
It's these kinds of things that when people say you're not a doctor, you don't have to be a doctor to make these observations, and these are the kinds of observations that a reasonable person can use to say, I don't think I want to do that, at least not yet, when it comes to a vaccine. That doesn't make you anti-vaxxer. You know, I have every other vaccine in the world, including very recently the pneumonia vaccine. But, you know, it's a ridiculous argument. It's a simple-minded argument, frankly.
Did you?
So now I just got you some more email by saying that the people who write in and complain about that are just simple-minded.
Well, I think you need to... As you know, Kevin, it appears that there, it may not appear to anybody except me, but one of the themes of the show is to connect seemingly disparate things, because one thing I learned in economics is anything you do affects somebody else. And I think there's not the education, the same kind that I somehow had, for a lot of people. They seem to think things happen in a vacuum, and nothing happens in a vacuum. I mean, in my opinion, or in my experience. And the thing that I've sort of learned, and, when I fight with Maddie about this, or not fight, we argue, the millennials are convinced that their access to real information is greater than it's ever been. And I'm going to say, define access. Access means that I can get something, if I want to know who the coach of the Blackhawks was in 1961, yeah, it takes me 10 seconds on a computer. So if you define that as access, I can't argue with them. But I also know that when you have less reporters ever creating original stories, then my question might be access to what exactly? Right? So
there's access to data and there's access to information. They aren't the same thing.
I mean, there's no doubt that it would save me, I don't have to run down to Harold Washington Library and get the Tribune from 1961 when they won the Stanley Cup to find out who the hell the coach was. I mean, or ask one of you guys who might remember. But there's no doubt that that is much faster. But the one other thing that the COVID thing has put right in my face is that I somehow or another got on a couple of sites. I think some of the listeners helped me out with this. But I get all this research from you know, stuff from Korea, stuff from Britain and so forth. And a lot of it appears pretty well done. I mean, again, I'm not a scientist, I'm not an entomologist, but it appears pretty well done, and none of it is available here unless you really know where to look. It does appear to me that certain types of information has been withheld from people. And even doctors, because I go to a few, unfortunately, sometimes I said, what do you think about that study from Britain or something? And they'll go, what study? I mean, they have a job to do all day long as well that has nothing to do with studying COVID. They're getting what they're being fed by their people. And what I'm saying is that I'm not so sure the access to information, like you just said, Kevin, has been all that open, especially if it didn't match with what somebody wanted to say. Now, I don't think at the end of the day, the fact that we got a vaccine or several of them pretty darn quick, and this thing is going away, and less people are dying, that's a spectacular thing. But even the stuff about this, whatever the science behind the vaccine, everybody, you're supposed to think that somehow or another, our guys totally invented this in the last 9 months. No, they didn't. It's been being kicked around and it's been a vex or a process looking for a disease for 20 years. I'm not saying anything bad about that.
Yeah, mRNA has been in the lab for a long time.
Yeah.
And you know, and if you trust the pharmaceutical companies, then you say good. It was a timely timely happenstance that it was ready to go when we needed it. If you don't trust the pharmaceutical industry, then you think they've been dying to start recovering their investments, and therefore they launched campaigns against things like hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin and so on that appeared to have some positive effect, so that they could start recapturing their investment. Now I would ask the question then: what on earth has the pharmaceutical industry done to earn our indulgence?
Not much
over the course of years. And the answer is, do they act in the public interest or do they act in their own financial interest? And over the years, we have seen them, when the two are at odds, choose their financial interests.
Well, someday, since I've never talked this story on the air, and I probably, I don't know, I mean, Dr. J's dad died a couple years ago now. There's a story regarding him in one of these pharmaceutical places that is, it's chilling. I mean, one of these days, maybe Kevin, when you're on, maybe next week or whatever, if you remind me of it, it is absolutely chilling. And it was reminded to me the other day of one of Audrey's friends has a granddaughter that, I don't know the whole details. The bottom line is she's needed a liver forever. And finally she got one. And everything was going swimmingly until recently, I guess she's having some rejection problems. Now, I think that she's still going to be okay from what I hear. I mean, I'm just totally anecdotal. But it could, I remember this stuff, Kevin, for whatever stupid reason. It's probably it's a gift I shouldn't have. All of a sudden, Dr. J's dad pops into my head without question. Because he was one of the original transplant surgeons. I'll give you a very short story on this. And one of the problems, obviously, everybody knows, is rejection. Where was the first transplanted organ done? This is the question that David should know the answer to this.
And yeah, I don't know.
I don't know.
It was done at Little Company in Mary Hospital.
Wow, that's where I was born.
Yep, and it was a lung, and somebody needed a lung, so they plunked a lung in somebody. This was like in the 50s, and everybody, the doctors and the family are basically high-fiving, and the person is dead in like 3 days. So they do an autopsy, and they see that the new lung they put in has been like decimated by the body, saying this thing doesn't belong to us. We got to kill it. I mean, that's anti-rejection drugs. Stop that. Well, Dr. J's dad, with his team, developed the first anti-rejection drug, and for years they used that, and that was one of the reasons he was so successful at transplants before other people were. Because he had this anti-rejection drug, in addition to being a spectacular surgeon, and a hell of a nice guy, and a lover of football. But actually, Don John's dad could have been one of my favorite people, the nicest man I ever met, and boy, talk about talented and smart. But he, all of a sudden, some company, I don't know who it was, I think it might have been Merck, but don't hold me to that, comes up with a, with essentially a competitive product. Now, his dad's situation was that it was only to be used hospital. I mean, they never sold it. They couldn't make any money on it. All right, so, and they didn't. But it was only for, you know, it was how many people were getting transplanted in the 70s and 80s? Not very many. So they can only essentially sell it to other hospitals at a price at which they didn't make any money. So all of a sudden, some drug company comes up with another drug that's not as good. Immediately, they start investigating John's dad regarding this drug, and it ends up being taken off the market, basically. And to this day, I mean, according to John, none of the new drugs are as good from the people he still talks to. I mean, they're probably pretty close, but they're not as good. So as soon as I heard about this girl having a rejection problem, I'm thinking, you know, if she freaking dies because of this, which I sure hope she doesn't, somebody somewhere who found a way to get John's dad's thing off the market, somebody should be shot or put in the square, and people talk about, you know, throwing stones at. I mean, you know, I'm not a violent guy. I mean, do people even know what the repercussions of this stuff is just for a buck? I mean, I don't even want to think about it. It's that somebody actually took the best rejection drug off the market, anti-rejection drug off the market, and how many people, you know, have died in the meantime? Nobody cares, because now all of a sudden somebody's making money on it. I mean, it just, you see this stuff happen, it's very hard not to be cynical. I mean, it really is. I mean, Kevin, I've always been questioning, but now I've turned stone cold cynical, because nothing ever happens to these people, it appears to me. I mean, am I being wrong or not?
And that's a perfect example then of, you know, why would you give pause? You know, if I make a personal choice that says I'm suspicious, I don't like some of the things I've seen, and therefore I want to wait, or I want to pass on the vaccine, why is that anybody else's business? Why do people think that they, you know, it's another point of view, and we must squash any point of view that is not typical.
Well,
that's the way we've gotten.
Well, like this morning,
I give you one more example, because this was in a different forum, but I within the span of 2 minutes heard someone, and this is someone, you know, really highly educated and in a, you know, position of authority, and within the span of 2 minutes said, dismiss the blood clotting issues with the vaccines as, oh, statistically, it's such a small number, statistically speaking, that you really, you know, it's worth it. And then turn around and at the same time tell me at an outdoor event, even if you're vaccinated, you should still be wearing a mask, because there's still, you know, there's still some concerns about spread even in vaccinated people. Now, you turn around and tell me the percentage of vaccinated people that are, at this point, that are capable of spreading the virus, the number of healthy people who are capable of spreading the virus, and the amount of spread of the virus at an outdoor event, and you take all of those three probabilities together and mix them in, and you tell me that's important, but I should dismiss this other probability on the other side of the equation. I think people are just friggin' nuts.
Yeah. I don't get the part. Like, I started the story this morning, driving in, was why would somebody go out of their way to tell 17-year-olds to get vaccinated? Because if the thing actually works, if I get mine, what do I care?
Well, and with what they've observed now, with, you know, some of the heart issues that we're seeing in young people, and trust me on this one, I don't believe that it's limited to young people. I'm pretty sure the vaccine doesn't know the age of the recipient. So, but we're seeing and observing a higher incidence of heart issues with young people, and they have virtually no likelihood of so much as going to the hospital with COVID, even if they are positive, let alone dying from it. So we're taking arguably as big, if not a larger risk, of doing damage with the vaccine than what we're trying to prevent.
Well,
what is behind this?
I don't know.
Process?
Well, you know, but it's
I don't understand it.
Kevin, I'm going to make a bizarre leap here. It's instead of it's sort of the same thing. Why not just rejoice in the fact that we collectively, and I believe that I don't give very much credit to them, but the Trump administration, by giving people money, the seven firms that were doing the vaccines early on, giving them money to start doing the, actually making the vaccines, making them, not just inventing them, I think that was absolutely spectacular. And these companies responded in a way, I think, that it only, well, a couple of them aren't Americans, but only in America. And I mean, the idea that we have taken the incidence of death in nursing homes and in old people down from some egregious amount to darn near zero is something we should all really, really be proud of. Right? I mean, I honestly believe that. But it's like...
Yeah, although I'd ask the question, could we have done that with the therapeutics?
Well, too? Maybe. But what I'm saying is if I buy a stock for a client at $10, boy, I wish this happened a lot, and it got to 20, why can't I just rejoice in the $10 instead of running around a TV and telling people this is the greatest stock on earth, you should buy it at 21, I need my extra dollar. I mean, why do we have to jam this onto 15-year-old people? Why can't we just declare a victory here and watch and observe for a while and see what's happening? It appears that we've broke the back of this thing, and the stuff is coming down. Why can't we just do this more sanely right now? I don't get it.
Well, and for whatever reason, we broke the back of it. So, you know, how much is tied to vaccine? How much is tied to seasonal? How much is tied to the number of people who have already gotten it, and as well as the people who already have pre-existing immunities? You know, it's a combination of things, and we can't even acknowledge that it's a combination of things. And I'm fine. Hey, if anybody wants to take the vaccine, I'm not criticizing it. I think it's...
Were you listening?
I think that's fine. I'll go back to what I said about therapeutics. How many people of the older age group wound up hospitalized or dead because we wouldn't allow the therapeutics while we were still in the process of developing a vaccine?
A lot.
And did we do that because we were really suspicious? You know, we had old people who were dying at very high percentages, and we're saying, well, you can't even try that therapeutic. Sorry, not allowed.
Right. Except they gave it to the president.
Well, God knows what they gave to the president. They gave him a lot of things,
yeah.
I'm sure. But whatever they did, yeah, they had him back on his feet in about 4 days.
It's the one that I just got, Kevin, and I didn't really turn this into a COVID fest this morning, but we did. I just got one from London. Now, they've had all kinds of issues over there because they didn't have enough. It seems to have hit their population really, really hard, harder than here. Don't know why. But they didn't have enough vaccines to get everybody right away. I just got this thing. It seemed, you know, fairly well, you know, a study first, certainly worth looking at, that the older people that they, because they keep testing, you don't hear any results of the tests here, the antibodies, whether people who have it on their own or had the COVID, whether the antibodies are as strong as the vaccinate. We don't seem to want to know the truth on that. But anyway, I get some of that from in Europe. So the latest is that the people who, since they didn't have enough vaccines, these are people in their 80s and 70s, so it might be different if you're younger. People in their 70s and 80s, if they gave them the first shot, and weren't able to give them the second shot for 12 weeks versus the recommended 2 to 3, that the antibodies are 2.5 to 3.5 times as strong if they wait 12 weeks instead of 3. Now, I don't think anybody dreamed that. People, I think, made the best guess that 2 to 3 for the second shot was the right number. Now, the question is, if that's true and is confirmed, you know, by if it continues to statistics seem to show that out, how long is it going to take for people here to say, hey, wait a minute, for anybody who's still getting their vaccinations, wait 12 weeks for the second one instead of 3? I mean, are we even potentially capable of saying, experience has shown now that you should take a longer time between the first and second vaccine, or are we going to stick with the 2 and 3 weeks no matter what happens?
Well, and let's go a little further and say, gee, that wasn't tested before you got the emergency use authorization. I can never say that. Emergency authorization?
Well, I think they're stunned that it's happening. I mean, I think they're absolutely shocked that.
Right, because nobody thought of it before.
Nobody thought of it before.
Which is part of what happens when you rush something to market. Look, I'm, as I said before, you're right. It's amazing that that this all came together so quickly. And, you know, there's lots of people who want the vaccine. And, you know, God bless them, go for it. But whether I do or not is nobody else's business.
Well, but I think the idea that if in some of these areas of the world where there aren't, I mean, certainly in India, the solution is not hospitalization and drugs. I mean, the solution is a vaccine. I mean, they don't have enough hospitals.
Actually, Carl has published some stats on that. They were doing very well with ivermectin, and then in one of the provinces, they came in and said, stop doing that. And
all
of a sudden, their cases shot up. But in the other provinces where they're using it, it's coming down quickly.
Well, yeah, they got it.
Both Kevin, the therapeutics, you know, they work.
So you could have done what Javi Baez did if you were just a little faster.
I was never that fast.
No, that guy's pretty quick.
I was a pretty good base runner in my day, Tom. I could cut a base hard and get from first to third on a single every time, but I couldn't have done that.
You're also, what did Lou Holtz used to say? You were so slow you couldn't pull a hammy?
Yeah, I'm not fast enough to pull a hamstring. Yep.
All right, bud, take care of yourself. Have a nice Memorial Day. SP Futures up 14, NASDAQ Futures up 47. Be right back, Mr. Carl Denninger.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howie. Mr. Dave Scatina on the board. SP Futures up 14, NASDAQ Futures up 46. We're bullish, not quite as bullish as we came in. We're up 17 then, but we're still positive, and this is usually, take that word, could be careful of, usually is it's a slippery word, isn't it, David? I'm going to say that Memorial Day Friday is right up there with Christmas Eve, and maybe the day before the 4th of July is, if you went back 100 years, you'd probably find, how many, David, would you say to the upside, 75 maybe?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, but beware, what did the guy say in Major League? He's got two balls. You got two balls. He probably won't throw at you again. But carefully, doesn't stick it in your ear or something along those lines.
Yeah, I think that's a lot.
Anyway, Carl, how are you, bud?
I am doing well.
You get your now. I know why guys like you are trading the Bitcoin. I was reading this morning.
Oh, I do not trade Bitcoin.
All right, you could have run with me for a second here, you know, but you didn't. You know, you're truthful. <of course. laughs>
In fact, my article yesterday was called BitCon.
Yep.
and was essentially expanding on an op-ed that was published in the Wall Street Journal, which I was kind of surprised that they printed that. It essentially said that we ought to ban this in the United States because it is essentially the only way that people that run ransomware attacks can get paid.
Now, why is it? Because every computer...
Therefore, if you cut the money off, then the incentive to do it goes away.
Why, I've heard from other educated sources on the show that the idea that it's supposedly, stealthy, that you can trace every single transaction.
You can, and this is kind of the dichotomy, okay? So the whole premise of a blockchain of digitally signed transactions all the way back to the origin of a particular coin, no matter how many times it gets divided and spent, whatever, is that you can trace every single transaction that was done by every single entity all the way back to the beginning of time that that particular coin was emitted by somebody's graphics card, okay? And that is irrefutable evidence because it's cryptographically signed. So if that evidence ends up in a courtroom, you're going to get convicted and you're going to go to jail. that's just how it's going to work. The problem is that you have a group of entities outside the United States that don't care what U.S. law is, that essentially tumble or launder the money. All right. So let's say that I rob you of 100,000 Bitcoin, dollars in Bitcoin, okay? So I rob you. And whether I do it by sticking a gun in your face or by locking up your computer until you give me the right, 100, it doesn't matter how I got there.
So it's 100,000.
The money, basically.
So I have to send you 2.5 Bitcoins for the 100,000 because trading right about 40.
Yeah, so you do that, and then... In theory, now the fact that you bought the Bitcoins with dollars and that you transferred them is irrefutably, I mean, that's evidence, okay? And that is admissible in court and there's nothing you can do about it. But the guy on the other end has the same basic problem you have in that the fact that he got it is irrefutable evidence. But what they have offshore in certain places is groups of entities that will break that down into very small amounts and repeatedly wash it through large numbers of other accounts. In other words, transfer it back and forth between multiple people. And in doing this, they essentially launder who's got it. Okay? And those entities are not ever going to respond to a U.S. subpoena or a U.S. regulatory.
So they're not, that sounds like almost a sort of a half-assed banking function. So you can't just go at the, and they're not big enough to say, look, I don't care what you did with it, but you got the 100,000, we're getting it from you. That's what they would do here.
Well, yeah, that's what they do here, but the problem is that doesn't work when that guy's in China.
Okay.
Okay. So the problem is that while you have the structure and the risk for somebody, you know, people say, well, you know, but there are legitimate use cases. Well, look, there are, but there's also criminal use cases. They're the vast majority. But there is, you know, think about this. Let's say that you want to buy some heroin, okay? And that's illegal. But you want to buy some heroin. Well, guess what? There is some value to knowing who you get the heroin from because how do you know there's not rat poison in it?
Right.
Well, okay? And yeah. So the thing is, for that to be anonymous on the side of the person that provides you with the thing that's against the law has a problem in that you don't know if you're getting what you think you're getting. And you might find out the hard way that you didn't. So, there is a yin and a yang to this. But the problem that you have with all these cryptocurrency things and with the ransomware and the cryptojacking, I call it cryptojacking. People call it ransomware. My name for it is cryptojacking because that's basically what it is. And the issue that I have with it is that without some clandestine way to get the money to people, there is no incentive to do it anymore, right? And that's think about the old days they kidnapped your kid, right? Well, what was the deal? It was small unmarked bills and a dead drop in a suitcase. Well, why? For the same reason, because if you can trace the money, you can bust the person that did it.
Well, sure, but I also, but I don't want it to. Here's my issue with that, Carl, is that everybody always takes things to the extreme, okay? So I'm not a fan of Bitcoin, but the idea that because there's a few nefarious people out there in on a percentage scale, that doesn't mean that I should lose cash, and if you and I have a $10 bet on golf, we have to tell the government we had a $10 bet. I mean,
I don't think, but see, Chief, I don't think that's really a question, okay, because the problem you have with all these cryptocurrencies is that the frictional costs involved in using them for ordinary day-to-day things, buying your groceries, okay, are so high that nobody uses them for that. Not that that you couldn't, it's that nobody does. Because of those frictional costs. And that leaves the volatility out of it, which is a huge problem.
All right, answer me this, since you brought up the subject. When this first started, my brother spots the vending machine for the Bitcoin. This has to be 5-6 years ago. Of course, it's in a currency exchange or someplace where you actually wouldn't want it if you actually cared about people. But so I think he bought $20 worth. I think the fees were $5.
Right.
But now my question to you is, if Solozy Edelson decided to take Bitcoin for whatever reason, and I walked in and said, okay, that car is $100,000, which cars can be now. I'll give you 2.5 Bitcoins for it. And he says, okay, what's the transactional cost on just on a transaction like that? I mean, who do those costs go to?
That's part of the problem is that the cost of clearing a transaction, of the formal cost today, is variable. You don't know what it's going to be until after the fact, and right now it tends to run about $60.
So if I bought a $100,000 car for $60, it'd be not even another ashtray. So I wouldn't care. But
except that with a check, the clearing cost is what, zero.
Right, but I'm saying if I bought a car for $100,000, then I'd say, wait a minute, why do I got to give you $60? I'm saying it at some level, it's like a ticket charge on a trade.
Yes, it is. But think about this: are you going to buy $100 worth of groceries with a $60 ticket charge?
Well, that's exactly my point. I mean, we have different clearing relationships for different people that I do business with, and some firms they charge you for the event, pretty much, and a very little bit per contract afterward, and other people charge you what appears to be a small number for a contract if you're doing a big contract, but if you're doing a bunch of little ones, it's prohibitive. You're right. It depends on what you're buying. I mean, if I'm going to pay one transaction on a car, I'm not going to care about it, right? But if I'm going in to buy a bottle of soda and it costs me $60 to buy the bottle of soda, that's a problem.
Yeah, and that's the basic issue is that you have these structures that have been set up. They inherently, by design, these things, the people who build these originally, they're Ponzi schemes. And the reason is the people who originally come up with any of these coins, and there's dozens of them now, all right? It's not just Bitcoin anymore. Every single one of those entities that came up with this, they get the original coins at essentially zero cost because the difficulty of solving the math problem gets exponentially harder. And so they all, this is Amway on steroids, all right?
Yeah.
These guys all steal from everybody who comes after them. And the whole reason it works is a speculative frenzy. There is no use case for it, because if there was a use case for it, it would have already happened. And yet the reality is that every one of them has this built-in concept that it gets harder over time. And the problem with and there's a limit to how many you can have. Well, the problem with it getting harder over time is that the guys who get in first make all the money. This is just like any other pyramid scheme.
Just like a pyramid scheme. I will say this, though, Carl, even though we've been on certainly enough for long enough together, we know each other's thoughts damn near, but I'm again this one a lot, but it doesn't surprise me at all, because I as a layman, I look more at currencies than most people, which is a horrible trade on my part, but because I managed to learn some of the stuff at the University of Chicago and actually paid attention, but it doesn't surprise me with what the governments are doing. The same thing as Rome, they just keep pulling essentially value out of their currency. It wouldn't surprise me at all if someday, somewhere, some country said, I'll tell you what, we're going to have a world currency, and we're not going to chase people down, that every time somebody has a golf bet, we want them to lower their pants and show us everything, that somebody's put something up and says, guess what? I own 90 bazillion gallons of oil, and I'm going to issue this currency that $1 equals a pint of oil or a cup of oil or something. And if you want to show up with a tanker and take your oil, you can. Or if you want to show up with oil, we'll give you the currency. It wouldn't surprise me at all if something like that doesn't pop up in the next 20 years. Something that is legit with something behind it from even a small company or a small country or even a big company. Because where people are going with their fiat currencies, there's a limit to how many dollars you can push out there and have a bunch of morons, well, I shouldn't say that, a bunch of people on TV telling you it's really the stocks that are going up and not the dollar going down. I mean, somewhere that story has to get out there. And somewhere, somebody's going to have an alternative way of doing transactions. Now, if we go back to barter, and I say, okay, Carl, I'll do your trades for free for the next 6 months, but by the way, you gotta paint my house. I mean, we could go back to that. We were there, right? You know, but trades are different because everybody knows what you did, but I'm saying it could be anything. I mean, I'll cut your lawn if you paint my house. We could get currency out of the system if the governments go too far, and they're getting there. And I'm wondering if this Bitcoin sort of thing is not, it's not perfect, it's not any good, it's horrible in my mind, but it might just be the first iteration of people saying, screw these fiat currencies.
Well, that's part of the attraction is that you have a bunch of people running around saying, oh, you know, this is how you get away from what the fiat currency abuse has been. Okay. And that's one of the common arguments that you hear from people about it is that it essentially stops the government from doing what they're doing to you.
Right.
My problem with that is no, it doesn't, because most of the mining and clearing that is being done in Bitcoin today is being done, guess where?
Well, a lot of it was being done by the Grand Coulee Dam, wasn't it, or someplace? But China.
In China.
Yeah, in China.
All right. So do you really believe for a minute?
No.
That the Chinese Communist Party doesn't have their fingers all the way up everyone's.
What I've been talking about this, I mean, you haven't listened to Carl, but I've been somehow or another I try and tie these things together, which is hard, but. The whole concept of, I mean, when you listen to the people in Washington arguing over $1.9 billion for hardening the Capitol and giving all these idiots money to spend on their security at home and all. I think we've totally lost because of what the Fed is doing. I don't think when you even listen to that, I was never a fan of Nancy Pelosi or I was never a fan of McConnell or any of these people, but. To me, they've changed in the last 10 years now in the sense that they have no idea of what this actually really costs. The thought of us spending $2 billion on something kind of as useless as this, in my opinion, if you had to go out and actually borrow the money from people, knowing how dear it is to people right now, or a lot of people, or you had to actually go out and tax for it, you might say to yourself, man, oh, man, I don't think I really need $2 billion for this issue. I mean, you know.
Right.
But now the thought is the Fed's just going to print it. What's the difference?
But remember, the Fed doesn't print anything. Congress prints all of it.
What I'm saying is they create the money through their balance sheet. They don't print
Correct.
It. But they create
it. But what do they buy to do that? Treasuries. Where does that come from? That
Correct.
Comes from Congress
Correct.
Doing what they do.
I know, but
who's responsible for that?
But
we are, because we put those clowns in Washington.
But the two-step transaction is, it's... The story should be, okay, that if they want to spend $2 billion on something that
they got to tax it,
they got to either tax it or legitimately borrow from it. When
right.
I say legitimately borrow from it, go out and actually do the borrowing. So in other words, the $2 billion comes in their checking account, and the $2 billion comes out of Carl's and Chief's and David's and all the listeners. So
right.
the net effect of the money is even. So whatever they're going to spend on this, it's $2 billion. It's not spent on something else. But so I don't. They don't want to do that. So their idea, their idea is we've got a new $2 billion to put in there. Well, there's a reaction to that, and it's starting to happen.
The reaction is prices go up.
Right. Well, absolutely. and to most people, I mean, not to the people who have pricing power, not to the Home Depots of the world, not to Amazons of the world, or anything like that, or the airlines even. For people who are just on salary or whatever they are, I'm going to say that inflation is the cruelest tax of them all. And and it's hitting people in the middle class, lower class right now like there's no tomorrow, and nobody cares.
Oh yeah, well it's and the horrible part of it is that the skewing of the table. Okay, I mean, you know, this morning there's an announcement out that now there's two bills going up in the House today, that are going to look at the origins of where COVID came from. Alright, and oh, by the way, strip China's sovereign immunity against being sued for all the people who got killed. Okay, I sort of like that idea. But can we add to this? How about all the people over here in the United States that have slammed the door on this conversation, including a coalition of news and social media organizations? They'll ban your account, throw you off, and now all of a sudden, oh, now you can talk about maybe this thing came out of a lab in Wuhan, but for the last year, if you said that, you got banned on Facebook.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Well,
but here's the problem I have with this. All right? Washington Post, Reuters, AP, a whole bunch of other news organizations got together and put together this thing called Trusted News Initiative to coordinate this activity. What else does Jeff Bezos own?
And a Washington Post.
Besides the Washington Post. What else?
Well, I'm not sure. What?
Oh, it'd be Amazon, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes, yes.
And who profited mightily from this?
Well, there's no question.
The tune of doubling his net worth?
There's no question. It's almost becoming like the McCarthy hearings with him able to get buddies in the press.
Well, yeah, I mean, the problem with all of this is that it's all fine and well to say, and by the way, the evidence is irrefutable, that Fauci knew that this place that they gave a grant to at NIH, because he signed off on it, as did his wife, who was the chair of the bioethics department at the NIH. Nobody wants to talk about her.
No.
Okay, so anything you're going to do that involves, you know, this sort of thing has to go through her office, too. The two of them both signed off on it. This money went to a place called EcoHealth and then over to the Wuhan lab. The person who runs that organization gave a video interview about a year before this started talking about running back coronaviruses through humanized cells in order to do gain of function. And that's exactly what they were doing over there in Wuhan with this money. And Fauci, when this started, shut Trump down and said there's absolutely no possibility that this thing came out of that lab.
Right,
he lied.
That.
He knew damn well that there was a possibility that it did. And everything that has followed since then was all about protecting the probability that this thing came out of China. I don't know if you remember, Chief, but fairly early on, when I was on your show and I wrote an article about it, when Italy was getting hammered really early on and a bunch of people were dying over there, I went and looked at some of the sequencing that they were doing of people who had come in with the virus, and I said this thing had to have been in the wild, had to have been, no later than October of 2019. We got today confirmation that I was right on that. Now, all I did in order to come up to do that was just a simple mathematical sequence on the entropy rate of these samples. That's all it was. There was nothing. I didn't have to have any confidential information to do this. You're telling me the people at the NIH didn't know this?
Yeah, what you did is the equivalent of Tom Clancy when he wrote Hunt for Red October, and the government investigated him for stealing secrets, and he read it all out of James Fighting Ships, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is that, you know, I look at stuff like this, and you know, I don't have an epidemiology degree. I don't need one. I can do arithmetic. Okay? Like, when you have something that is so stunningly easy to trace backwards off nothing more than probability, and that's the latest that it could have been. Well, now we've got, there were hundreds of cases in early November in China, which means it had to have been out in the wild, you know, 3-4 weeks before that.
When you say the wild, out in society.
Yeah, out in society. They had 200-300 cases in Wuhan in the second week of November.
Well, they kept blaming it on the fresh air market.
Yeah, and that's a load of, you know,
what. Oh, yeah.
And I've gone through why that's the case, too. That's garbage. But this is, you know, that's the narrative that was run. And if you said anything else in the mainstream media, on any of the social media sites, bang, your account's gone.
Hey, we come back from, well, we're not going to break anytime soon, but before I lose my total train of thought on this Bitcoin thing, we went off on a tangent, a good one, by the way. First of all, how do people make these kind of determinations? If you, I'll start this in the beginning because I'm in the middle already. If you have an account at PTI or otherwise, and you have a bunch of games, okay, and say you got AMC, you got Ford, you got places you're making money at. Good for you. We'd love to see it. If you have a clunker loser and it becomes at the end of the year tax wise, you can sell your clunker loser and match it up against your gains, correct, Carl?
Right.
But what you can't do is buy the clunker loser back a week later.
Yeah, you got to wait 30 days.
That's considered a wash sale. So you can't count that loss because you essentially, because of the wash sale rule, they're going to say you didn't really take it. You just did it for tax purposes. But now this morning at CNBC, they're talking about Bitcoin is not covered by that. Now, I guess I don't I'm going to ask you why. But they're saying if you have a bunch of gains in stocks, say in your fiscal year, and I mean, most people don't, but if it ended, May 3rd or June 1st or May 31st, that you can take your loss in Bitcoin, match it up against your stocks, and then buy the Bitcoin back like the same day and you're okay. Now, why would Bitcoin not be treated like a stock or another asset?
I can't imagine why that would be the case. You know, back when I used to trade very actively, this was something that I had to be really careful with because I do a lot of stuff towards the end of the year, you know, to do exactly that, right? I got a loser here, I got a winner here, try to offset the two so I don't end up writing this huge check to the IRS. I flagged both of those in my software so that I didn't touch the loser for a month until the end of January. Because God forbid, I traded that thing again and oops. So, that rule is something that, you know, that I've lived with for a very long time. I don't trade nearly as actively, so it's not as big a problem today as it used to be, you know, 10 years ago. But I can't imagine why that wouldn't apply to cryptos.
Yeah, I can't either. I mean, I'm trying to read it here in the article, and they're saying that the first benefit is called tax loss harvesting. It's allowed for stocks and other securities, but the second benefit isn't. Stock investors aren't allowed to buy the same or similar security in 30 days, but they're saying you can do, you can sell crypto for a loss and then use that loss to reduce or eliminate capital gains tax on winning investments. Then they can quickly buy back the crypto they sold so as not to miss out on a subsequent rebound in price. I can't imagine where that would say that, but it must somewhere. I mean, these guys.
I don't have any idea. I mean, I know that there are ways to get around that. In with stocks, in that in some cases an options transaction is sufficiently different in character that, you know, that you can do that.
Well, it has to do with amount of the money, I think.
Well, you got to be careful because, spreads can act like a synthetic position and would be considered similar, and therefore you couldn't. But
well, you also can't
a
sell
straight up bet. Yeah, you probably could do that.
Well, you can't sell a. Like if a stock's trading 100, and again, I'm not a tax guy, but there's a certain amount of in the money and at the money rules, and in the money. In other words,
right.
I can't sell a 40 call and not say it's an effective sale. And it clearly is.
Right. I'm just saying that there are things you can do that relate to that security that are not similar enough that they wouldn't be deemed the same transaction.
Right.
But I don't see how you get away with that with cryptos because, I mean, it there aren't derivatives on it as far as I know other than the futures.
Well, plus, how would anybody give an opinion that it's not like any other asset? Where would it even say that?
Well, I can't imagine if it's a tradable asset, I can't do that same thing with corn futures. why can I do it here?
Yeah, I know. I know it's kind of bizarre, but. Hey, the second half, Carl, let's talk a little bit about some of the valuations and some of these stocks that are, these things that are running up again is, AMC, and we've got the what's the other one? The GME, the, GameStop, and those.
Yeah, GameStop, yeah.
And I'm looking here I don't want to call anybody a dopo because they're up money on this, but I mean, how many people that ran AMC up yesterday? By the way, I have some people that have positions in it. It was a good day, so I'm not pitching about it. But the I mean, the thing is up $5 today. Does anybody even realize that that's pushing $3 billion in market cap in this place on a Friday morning, and their revenue per share is like $2? I mean,
yeah, it's nuts.
I mean, they might have gotten, who knows? I mean, the thing is, I think some of these companies got tremendous cash from government, Carol, to the point where they're more whole than people think they are. Some of them are. But how you determine that? I mean, if I was going to look and I found out they got $1 billion from the government, then maybe the stock could be, quote, worth this. But they're not telling me. I mean, it's not like some people don't know. But, there's restaurants around that you think are doing poorly that had their best years ever, Carol. I mean, I think you know that, and got money on top of it, right? So they're not many, and a lot of them are out. I mean, thousands of them are out, but there's a few that actually this the gold from the leprechaun's little bull landed on their head, right? I mean,
it's kind of funny because like around here, all the people that have that own Airbnbs and VRBOs, they're oh Lord, have they had a good year?
Okay. Yeah.
On the other hand, the local places that are trying to hire people to serve drinks, they've got a problem.
Well, that's probably very. S&P futures up 13 now, down from they were 17 and a half when we came in. Nasdaq, and it's been the pattern every day. Nasdaq's been up in the morning and finishes down in the afternoon. We're only up 32 now. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
Stocks.
Get ready.
Stocks and jocks. Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now. Right here.
Go ahead. Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howley, Mr. Dave Scatina on the board. We've got a flash of personal consumption expenditures, the alleged PCE that the Fed looks at. was supposed to increase 2.9% year over year and 0.6% over the past month, but it actually rose 3.1% year over year, higher than expected. Wow, go figure. I'm shocked. Shocked and appalled. Even all the little crazy stuff they do to it to make it not do anything. S&P futures up 11.50 now. Maybe that's part of that. Came down a little bit because of that. NASDAQ futures up 27. Dow up 139. Individual stocks. Boeing is the down mover, down 290. We've got American Express up 276. We've got Johnson & Johnson up 139. Big mover in the Dow is CRM, is up 1167. Those guys had earnings last night, so they're up a bunch. Asia, Nikkei up 600, 2.1%. That's a move. They've been down, but boy, it's a big bounce. Shanghai down 8, call that flat. Hang Seng up 11, call that flat. So not all the way through the Asian markets, just Nikkei was up. Over in Europe, DAX up 95.6%, FTSE up 15.2%, CAC around up 41.6%. As a way of review, yesterday Dow was up 141, S&P up 5, NASDAQ down 2. So NASDAQ's been every day kind of limps into the close. Matter of fact, yesterday was like a third or fourth down day in a row after being up most of the time during the day. Bonds, 10-year, it was up 2 basis points, down 2, but now it's back up to 1.61. Bond minus 0.17, Japan positive 0.09. Oil up 52 cents, 67.37. Brent up 38 cents, 69.84. Pushing towards 70. Natural gas up 6 cents, 302, which, well, ask Carl why he thinks that that's going up in the summertime, but it is. RBOB is up 1 cent, 216. We've got gold down 960 now at 1888. Silver down 36 cents, 27.75. Copper down 6 cents, 459. And we've got Bitcoin is down 2,200, back down to 36,000. So it was 32 grand to start the week over the weekend. I think it made it back to 40. Now it's kind of in the middle. We'll see if it collapses 3 weekends in a row and it come back during the week. It's been going down on weekend. So we'll see this weekend, 3-day weekend. David, what do you have for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
7:36 in Chicago. Weather currently 44, cloudy, pretty windy. The highs today, we're going to have some rain this afternoon. It's going to be probably around 50, 51 degrees, a lot of wind. For our Phoenix listeners, it's 71 and clear. It'll be a high of 101 and sunny. Traffic, earlier rain this morning made it a mess. There's solid traffic off of 55 north at the Ryan exit, which is back into 55 up all the way. The Kennedy just was a disaster this morning. There was a rollover east before Division, a rollover truck. Now it's blocking the two right lanes, which also caused there's another accident east at Addison Street where the right lane is blocked.
David, I thought only you could flip over a garbage truck, and was it full and the garbage get all over the expressway?
Well, and then it's crazy. It just, everything's just a mess this morning.
Wouldn't want the job of going and sweeping up the garbage off the expressway.
Yeah, but boy, the Kennedy's always bad, but now it's really bad.
Yep.
In sports last night, NBA playoffs, Suns lose game 3, 109-95 to the Lakers, so they're now down 2-1. In baseball last night, Sox beat the Orioles 5-1. Cubs beat the Pirates 5-3 in a crazy game. Arizona drops ones to the Cards in 10 innings, 5-4. In golf this weekend, we are in Fort Worth, Texas, the Charles Schwab Challenge, and the NHL playoffs continue. Back to you.
Carl, the market keeps percolating along here. I had because I'm a wacky graduate of University of Chicago, I remember this conversation, but it was probably 7 o'clock on a Saturday morning. I used to take my mom out to breakfast every Saturday early. I'm heading south on the Ryan, and they're interviewing some guy who was a Fed guy back in the late 60s, early 70s. He was on I don't know if he was a governor or what he was, but he was or president of one of the local Feds. And he started talking about the inflation back then and in the early onset of it. And the guy doing the interviewing was actually real good. Nobody hired him today because he was asking the right questions. And he says, well, how did you guys manage to, like, miss this? And he goes, nobody really knew that much about money supply. Nobody, read the work of Milton Friedman. So we knew we were putting money into the system, basically, since the Bretton Woods situation in the 60s. And we really were putting money in, for lack of a better term, to pay for the Vietnam War, right? And,
right.
And he says, we get this, you know, we get inflation moving up a little, but then we get this shack from Saudi Arabia or the OPEC, and then we had the six-day war, and all of a sudden we get these supply problems, and we kept thinking, hoping/thinking that the inflation we were starting to see had only to do with this stuff, that it was supply chain. Does this sound familiar? Supply chain problems, blah blah. You know,
where have I heard that before?
Yeah, where have I heard that before? And he said, all of a sudden we got to 1 year, one meeting, and finally we looked around at each other. He said, we pulled energy out of our calculation because we said, okay, that's because of those dirty Arabs, basically. They're screwing with us. So that we can't count that because they didn't use the term transitory, but that's, you know, that could change tomorrow, so we can't be making policy based on that. Then we said, okay, well, wait a minute. We got food that, by the way, you have to dry the soybeans and the corn, right? And that takes gas or whatever the hell they use. And then you're constantly driving stuff from one place to the other in the food chain. So really,
right,
the price of a box of cornflakes, if it's a buck, really is like 20% transportation, which is probably right. So now we got to pull food out because it's part of oil. So we pulled food and oil out, and we went with that for a while. And then we pulled out a couple other things which hadn't even been published. Because finally one day we're sitting around and the numbers drop on the table. We all look at each other and go, you know what? We can't deny it anymore. We got like bad inflation. And I'm sitting there listening to this, driving in the car, my old, I don't know even what junker it was I was driving at the time. And does that remind you so much of today or what? The constant excuses of where it's coming. Oh no, it's just in flowers. It's just in supply chain problem with 2x4s or something. And in fact, it isn't, Carl. It's a general issue of too much money chasing too few goods. Some goods get benefit from it and some don't. And right now it's the people that own stocks, that own houses, that own old cars. I mean, how do these guys at this point, how do they assume, because we have the idea that people saying, you know, we're not experts on stuff or doctors. I don't have to be an expert to say that when used prices are up 10% in 1 month, it may be a little bit because people are heading back to work, and it might be a little bit because we've got, you know, chip problems in the new cars, but that's a big number. It's not like it's 3% or 3.5%. 10%, I don't think I've ever seen that, Carl. I mean, plus you know you pumped 25% more money into the system last year. So instead of denying it, you should be looking for it and seeing, is it popping out? Well, the answer is yes. So it's not like, you know, these guys were oblivious like they were in 68 that going from 4% a year to 8% of the year in the money supply would have all this issue. These guys know this stuff. And by the way, they didn't go from 4 to 8, they went from 4 to 25. So how can they even be?
Yeah, that's part of the problem is that, you know, there was this rubric that went around when we locked everything down. We told everyone to stay home, which, you know, ended, a year and a month ago, right? I mean, you know, that was April last year. It was everyone stay home, 30 days, right? It was originally supposed to be 2 weeks to slow the spread. Ended up being 2 weeks plus another four that you sit in your house and watch Netflix. Well, what was expected was that, well, there'll be some supply chain disruptions, but they're a month. They're going to work their way out, and in the next, you know, 3-4 months, everything will be fine. Okay, so August of last year, I had the siding replaced on my house because I didn't like what was there. All right, it wasn't worn out. I just thought it was kind of ugly, and I wanted to do something different. I managed to get it, but now... Okay, and it's what? It's coming up on a year.
Yeah.
Last August. Now, you got places around here that are going up that have house wrap all over them, and it's been that way for the last 2-3 months. And I talked to a guy that does this kind of stuff. He's like, I order it. They tell me, well, you know, it might show up in 3 months. Maybe.
Maybe, yeah. It's like buying a...
And it's not just siding. It's everything.
Well, it is, except... The fact that the prices are being driven up is being driven up by the dollar going down. I mean, it is,
but remember that everyone else is doing this too, which is why the DX is sitting at 90 and not 50.
Well, okay, but I'm saying people don't. You're not driven to look at it that way. You're not driven to look at the, because you think your dollar is sacred, and that's how you get played. You think the dollar is sacred. I mean, well, I have a couple guys here in the building that work for the building, and they do side jobs on weekends, right? And
right.
One of the guys yesterday, when I cook breakfast for people here, because there's no breakfast places open downtown, of course, these guys are welcome to come on up every morning. So I'm the only one who cooks for the building, right? Because I love to cook after the show between... Anyway, more than anybody needs to know. But they'll come up and they'll say, you know, I worked, you know, all 8 weekend days last month, and I'm no further along with my bills. This one up, that one up, this one up, and I'm essentially break even. And
right.
I had a problem with my car. It was $1,500. Well, there went how many Saturdays? He's like, what are we talking about? That would have been $500 5 years ago. Now it's $1,400, $1,500 for the same repair. It's all over the, and every single one, Carl, isn't a supply chain problem. It's just an overwhelming amount of cash, and people are charging it because they can.
But then what goes along with that, though, is that this also feeds part of the employment issue.
Right.
Okay, in that, you know, you've got, this area is very heavily tourist-oriented. Well, I'll tell you what, starting this weekend, with all the help wanted signs that I've seen up, you come down here and you think you're going to have a great time, it might not be. Because there ain't nobody taking care of you.
I'm curious.
Carl. Everybody's open, but if you expect the level of service that you would have gotten 2 years ago, I think you're in for a surprise.
All right, Carl. Let's. We've talked about this, and I've talked about it with many different guests. I'm having an issue dealing with this. To be honest with you, and when I say dealing with it, understanding it in Chicago. People will say that there's a problem hiring people in restaurants and bars. And I'm not going to say they're wrong. I hope that they're willing to pay more than $10, because $10 is not $10 like it was a year ago March. Right?
Right.
But the point being is, there's got to be thousands of places here in Chicago that are closed. So the supply, even if there are some people who don't mind sitting on the sofa doing nothing for the extra $300 a week, I don't know how many of those people there are, but let's say there's a few. It can't be as many as the people who don't have a job to go back to in that industry. The fact that McCormick...
That's part of the problem, is that you had the displacement, okay, and a lot of people said, you know, blankety-blank this, we're going somewhere else.
Right.
Right? Well, now that reservoir of employees is gone because they went and did something else.
Well, that's right. I mean, they're not waiting
Hello?
Well, they're not waiting by the phone for a year and a half for the phone to ring and say, come back this afternoon for your $10 an hour job.
Then here's the other thing that goes along with that. Okay, so now you have to tap some other group of people, right, to try to convince them to come form that part of the workforce again. Okay, that's nice, except they look around and they go, well, wait a minute. Bacon's up $2 a pound, and so's everything else. My electric bill's going up. My cabs have gone up. My property tax. $10? You're nuts.
Well, the cost of the used cars, if I got to drive to get to work, Uber, and some guys are telling me now that if you live near downtown, Uber has doubled in the last 8 weeks.
Well, that's the thing, though, is that if people look at the total cost, and I get into this with people all the time, because there's this group of, you know, so-called best places to live that goes on, you know, based on whatever category, right? Fox News publishes them, CNN publishes them, everybody's out with these things. And every single one of those that I've looked at, I've said, you know, you've left 80% of what actually causes me to have to spend money out of this.
Yep.
And it's that 80% that is my monthly nut that matters. So how about we start talking about those things like the cost of the Uber to get to work?
Well, we still have, because, you know, we talked about this with Kevin a little bit, the news somehow is being controlled. I don't know how. I mean, I don't. The people on the right think it's just, you know, it's the people on the left doing it. I think somehow or another it's big business doing it, because the idea that every big business now has this right to have people at $10, $11 an hour. I mean, I got to believe in Chicago. I mean, it's not like there aren't lazy people in the world. I mean, we all know of one. Everybody's got a cousin that's happy to sit on the sofa for 3 hours a week, but there aren't very many in terms of. And I look at the amount of jobs gone from Chicago in the restaurant industry. But for God's sake, McCormick Place hasn't had a show. How many people in the industry, when you get a show with 50,000 people here, how many people, and they go out to eat, they're not cooking in their hotel room like I am in the office.
Right.
I mean, they're eating three meals out. So that's 150,000 meals a day. Now, all those people aren't working. I mean, the Conrad Hilton's not open. The Palmer House is not. I mean, all the steak places downtown, they're not open. The breakfast, I don't know anywhere to downtown here to go for breakfast. There's no place open. So, I mean,
it's sad.
Yeah, I mean, so it's like, okay, I can't believe that that number of people is less than the people that are sitting on their ass at home because they don't want to bake. But what I do see is one of the guys in the building just went out and bought a used car. And last time I did the calculations, at $10 an hour, Carla, was 67 hours just to pay for your tax on a $5,000 car, your title, your license, your sticker, the thing to park in front of your own house. If you added all that up, it was like 600 and some bucks, which at $10 an hour is 60 some hours. So your first week and a half, you're working for the city and the state just to get your car. That's if you had the $5,000 on your own to buy the car. And this was 2 years ago I did this study, by the way. Now, of course, you can't come close to a car for $5,000 if the thing has wheels on it, for God's sake. I mean, you got to pay, what, 10 just for a clunker now?
I mean, well, where I used to live down Northwest Florida, all of the businesses on the Destin side of the bridge used to complain that they couldn't get young people that were willing to work those retail jobs that were, they're paying $10 an hour. Okay. All right, there's a problem. There's a toll bridge you have to go over to get there. It's $4 a pass.
Yeah.
So what? Your first hour after you take taxes out, you don't make any money?
That's right.
So then what do? They give you a 4-hour shift. Well, now, why am I getting off my butt going across that bridge when I get supposedly paid for 4 hours of work, but I only get to keep 3?
Carl, the people we hire, are they totally oblivious? I mean, this has to be, if we have this, quote, labor shortage in Chicago, and, Indiana has people, obviously it's a state has people. Is this the right time to raise the Skyway Bridge to 580 from 450? I mean, is this really the right time to do that? I got to believe, can there be a worse time? I mean, or is that just me?
Well, that's the thing, is all this stuff hammers people on the lower end.
Yeah.
Okay? It's, people like you and I. I don't work nearly as much as I used to because I've decided I'm just not going to play their game anymore. But you got a lot of people that, during the lockdowns and the pandemic and you got to all wear masks and all that. Well, they're like, screw that. I'm working from home.
Yep.
Well, you didn't lose any money. In fact, you probably saved money because you didn't have to pay for parking. You didn't have to pay for, transit. You didn't have to wear a suit. You could run around in your underwear if you wanted to, as long as you had a shirt on, nobody would know. And that was because everything was being done over Zoom. Well, guess what? That doesn't work if you're flipping burgers at McDonald's, does it?
No, and I don't. I think that there's if you put the two of us, even though I think we both know something about, especially with the listeners helping it out and so forth, we know something about economics, and we understand that everything you do has some kind of reaction somewhere else that's probably positive and maybe some negative. I am just stunned that. When you tie this thing together, where let's elect the movie star mayor or the movie star president, or pick somebody who has this issue and make them mayor, or this guy's rich, we'll make him governor. When you start having this bizarro, I'll say, resume to be in these positions, and all of a sudden, God forbid, there is a crisis. And anybody doesn't think this COVID has been a serious crisis. Really, I don't know where you're looking or what you're smoking, but it has been to try and expect all these people to react in a way in which they show they know what they're doing. I mean, I get it, Carl. You at some point you can't be in a situation where you can't have sex unless you've had it before. There's got to be a first time, right? I mean,
right.
My uncle used to say you should never drive the Dan Ryan until you drove it before. He said, but how do you do that? There's going to be a first time for, so it's not like you couldn't put somebody inexperienced in a job and have them all of a sudden really rise to the occasion. But I bet if you look somewhere in their background, even if you had to dig deep, you'd find that there was a resume there that everything they did, even if they were cutting grass in the forest preserve, that somehow they were a guy that figured out that if you moved the picnic tables first, you could cut the grass. That somewhere all along the line, that they excelled and had a thought when other people maybe didn't, and were just kind of born leaders even on a small scale and problem solvers. that you just don't put somebody in a position that never did anything and say all of a sudden, you know, World War III happens and they're going to react positively. You hope that they could. You hope that those skills are in there, but it's just not the right trade. I could put on some really stupid spread, and guess what? It could actually work, Carl, but it's not the right one. I mean, the fact that it might have worked and I made a few bucks doesn't make it the right choice at all, does it? I mean, we don't care if stocks are worth anything. If we buy them, they just go up, which always, you know, is a nice thing to have happen to you, and I better be lucky and smart. But the idea that this is going to go on forever, I don't care if they make any money. Don't even tell me what they do. It's going up. I want in. I mean, somewhere we have to know that there's an end to this stuff. You can't hire somebody because they gave out pies at the last picnic, and all of a sudden expect them to. If there's no problems, you know, you go back. We played Sunday softball, right? And I haven't played lately, but hopefully we'll be playing pretty soon again. And one of the guys, he picks the teams, right? Well, he forgets to pick like some infielders, and he's almost as old as me. He can still hit, and he can, you know, do some stuff. If you hit the ball right at him, he might actually catch it, but his range is like from here to across the table, right? So he plays shortstop for 9 innings. Guess what, Carl? He never got a ball. It made no difference. He was a perfect shortstop for the day. Well, what if he'd have gotten 10 balls in the first inning and pitched 9 of them? So, yeah, you could be a Clinton and have essentially 8 years where every crisis was of your own making, you know, messing right with some girl on the pool table or something. But nothing really bad happened the whole time he was there. The market went up. They actually went positive for a while. Okay, that he was the equivalent of that shortstop. But now Bush was there for like 30 seconds, and he's got 9/11 to deal with. And you know, all of a sudden, you know, Bush was all of a sudden, he was like a deer in the headlights. Right? I mean,
that's the thing is that you get essentially we elect people because they're celebrities in one form or another. Okay.
Correct.
And this is the nature of politics, right? I mean, I don't know that this is frankly, I don't think it's one to the president, but the further up you go, the more crazy that kind of thing gets. Look at what you have right now in Chicago. You've got a mayor who says, I'm not going to give an interview to anybody that isn't black.
Right. It's unbelievable.
That's unreal. Does anybody bother to pay attention to the fact that racism is racism no matter who it's aimed at?
No, I don't know if you ever listened to our man Lou on Thursday. He claims that my view of the world, that I don't see color and I'm an absolute follower of Martin Luther King that says don't judge anybody by the color of their skin, by their character. Well, that means if they have bad character and they happen to be black, you get to do that too. Right, you know.
Well, yeah. I mean, last time I looked, that was the whole idea behind what MLK said, right?
Yeah. Well, but now Lou says that is absolutely not where we're going now. We're not going now at all. There's this, you know, this historical level of you're supposed to believe that you're a racist and everybody else, whatever people do is fine, but it's clearly not what I think. You're not supposed to be colorblind, but to me, I think you are supposed to be colorblind. I've always felt that way. I mean, that's the way I was raised. I know a lot of guys that are white that I don't want to be in the same room with. And guess what? There's a lot of guys that are black I don't want to be in the same room with. What's the difference? People are people. Isn't that where we're supposed to be going? Evidently not.
Well, that's where I think you were supposed to be going. But, you know, the thing is that when you ignore history and you ignore the fact that there is a wide divergence in people, individuals, Not just in their character, but also in their ability. What you end up doing is putting people in positions that they have absolutely no business being in because they're either corrupt or incompetent. And at the end of the day, the only difference between the two is that one steals and the other one just destroys. They both end up destroying, but one of them steals at the same time.
Right. Well, yeah. Well, I wouldn't accuse either Lori or Pritzker of that sort of crook, where they've got the piles of ones in the or tens in the shoebox, like Paul Powell.
I'm not saying they're stealing.
Right.
I'm saying that the outcome from a societal standpoint is the same. The only difference is whether somebody siphons something off in the process.
Well, I got a question for you, David. Feel free to opine. In today's world, when Paul Powell was caught in the hotel room after having the heart attack or whatever he was doing, and they found that he had taken the shoeboxes full of cash with him, even though he was in a hotel room. Now, in today, today's world, what would he have? He'd have the Bitcoin password in his pocket or what?
Probably.
Most likely.
I like the cash better. I can relate to the cash better more. Anyway, Carl, thank you very much. But do you got any plans for the weekend? Or are you stay vacationing, or what do they call those things?
Oh, there's going to be, I think, plenty of grilling that goes on. But the zoo level around here is going to be off the rack because we're a lot less crazy than some other areas. So I'm expecting that staying away from the town probably be a good idea.
I might actually, especially if the weather's lousy, I might take a ride down to Ogden Dunes. They do for people that probably don't know this in this country, in the last, maybe not World War II, but ever since then, the toll of people dying in these wars falls much more percentage-wise in small towns than big cities for whatever reason. And if you go to one of these small-town Memorial Day things, I mean, there's people that lost people and, you know, that type of thing in there, and it's America heartwarming. You should do like once a year, I think. Anyway, Carl, thank you. SP Futures up 10 now only. NASDAQ Futures up 19. Back on Tuesday, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't f***ing know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.